Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Women's Health for every stage of a woman's life, offering compassionate care and comprehensive obstetric and gynecological services from routine exams to specialized pelvic surgery. More information is available at 1-800-492-5538 or go to www.umm.edu/Women's Center. And if that's too much to remember, then just go to the Steiner Show website and you can log on there.
That's right.
There you go. I'm Mark Steiner, and of course,
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And we are here for our second hour. And Anthony, of course, is Senior Media Fellow at the Center for Emerging Media, where I'm the Executive Director. And we produce both of our programs out of there and do many other things as well.
A lot of great work. And you're our great leader there, visionary leader. No, this is true. I think a lot of people, if they go to that website, they'll see that although these two great programs are part of our foundation, you really do have a lot going on for these issues that we talk about every day this show. And so we're blessed.
And Anthony, you can hear, of course, every Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. on the Anthony McCarthy Show right here on WEA in this time slot. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We are being joined by a number of people during the course of this hour. We received an email last week from a friend who is involved in these issues, alerting us to the fact that the University of Maryland's law clinic, the Environmental Law Clinic, that has led drives around social justice issues, environmental issues around the state. We're going after some large corporations around polluting our waterways and chicken manure and more. And so people who represented those districts where those farms are located came up with a bill to, and we'll let our senators talk about this in a minute, bills to take away the funding of the law clinic, or at best now to question them about who their clients are. And so it's caused quite a controversy, and the vote was actually 35-12 in the Senate, which was a shock to many people. We are joined in studio by Robert Percival, who is director of the Environmental Law Program at the University of Maryland School of Law. And Robert Percival, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Thanks, Mark. It's good to be here.
We asked a number of senators delegates who represent the point of view there had to be some restrictions on the law clinic. We've had a hard time getting people on, though. There is an Eastern Shore delegation dinner tonight, I've heard, and other things are going on. But we've been trying to get on. We think that Delegate Richard Soce may be joining us shortly. He's Deputy Minority Whip, and he's from the Eastern Shore. And we look forward to having him on, should he call in. We are joined at this moment by Senator Lisa Gladden, who's Democratic State Senator from Maryland's 41st District and has been in the Senate since 2003, as has Senator Jim Brochin, who is with us, who represents the 42nd District. And Lisa and Jim, welcome. Good to have you both with us as well.
Thank you very much.
Mark, good to speak to you.
Both of you. Thank you for joining us. So let's talk about what's going on here. I mean, so let's see if we have this completely right. And if you don't mind, I'd like to turn to Robert Percival first, who is director of the Environmental Law Program at the University of Maryland School of Law. But as I understand it, that your law clinic and the law clinics at the University of Maryland, as I was reading today, are ranked number 8th among all law schools in the country in training lawyers in your law clinics.
And our environmental law program is rated 6th in the nation.
That two steps up. that you represent environmentalists and regular people, and some of the people you've had to sue are Purdue Farms and Family Farms under the Clean Water Act, alleging they pollute the Eastern Shore, the Chesapeake Bay. And then certain Eastern Shore lawmakers came in and backed provisions in budget bills that would withhold funding on the condition that School of Law report on individual cases and clients in its clinics. Is that where we are?
Yes, essentially that's right. I actually founded the Environmental Law Clinic when we set up our Environmental Law Program 23 years ago. And the idea behind the clinic was that we would have the Chesapeake Bay as its client. The Bay doesn't have money and lobbyists to defend it like companies do. And so the idea was to allow students to learn how to become real environmental lawyers by actually handling cases and representing natural resources and environmental groups who otherwise wouldn't be able to afford legal representation.
So, Senator Gladden and Senator Brochin, let me start with you, Lisa, and then go to Jim. Explain to us what's going on in the Senate here. I mean,
Lisa, that's a good one, isn't it?
Well, It's odd. I think part of it, first off, Professor Percival, I'm glad to hear you. I was there when you started the environmental law clinic, I guess, 23 years ago.
I remember you well.
You must have just been like a junior high school intern then, Lisa.
Well, I'll be that. I'll accept your comment.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
With this particular piece of, it's not an individual bill. It's budget language that was inserted into the budget itself for the purposes of not necessarily restricting funding from the University of Maryland, but to do two things, I think, to sort of cast sort of a chill on the academic freedom that our law school has had for years and years as it relates to the clinic. And this basically says, we don't want you to do this, we don't like what you're doing, and we're going to ask you to tell us by submitting a report, tell us who your clients are and what kind of work you're doing. And it's not going to take the money away as long as, quote-unquote, this report is provided to the legislators who are requesting it. But the real issue, I think the real issue is that the Eastern Shore legislators are protecting those big businesses that you guys seem to want to keep unnamed.
No, I'll name them.
Or do.
Yes.
Right. I mean, that's what it is. And so they're saying, okay, we're mad. The University of Maryland clinic has done a great job of putting on notice that Purdue pollutes the bay. And they're mad about it, so they're saying, okay, we're going to get you the best way we can. They're not going to hurt the university if they submit the report, but in the years that the clinic has been in existence, that's never needed to have been done.
Jim, you want to leap in on some of that?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, Lisa did a great job explaining. I look at it from a different angle. You know, I'm not an attorney. I did do my master's doctorate work in Soviet foreign policy at College Park, and I can tell you that...
Does that hold you in good stead for the state senate? I'm sorry.
I've actually made that joke in community association. And there's like a silence and then a nervous laugh. when I talk about the Politburo's workings and the leadership's working. But, you know, for me, it's all about, you know, it's all about academic freedom. And, you know, the best thing that I can tell you and how strongly I feel about it was probably one of the most heated debates that I remember in my 8 years here is, you know, I support the death penalty. And I'm probably one of the more conservative, if not the most conservative, Democrats in the Senate. And I see the law students from the law clinic a lot of times take on cases of people who are on death row. And I respect that, and that's fine, and it's part of your training, and that's what academia is supposed to be about. And I was just aghast. And, you know, I guess my training at College Park, you know, and then what happened, you know, with the Iranian protests over the summer and seeing Tiananmen Square, you know, 19 years ago, and, you know, watching everything, I mean, and, you know, and looking at what goes on in Havana University, I mean, to see a university be an arm of the state is horrifying to me. And, you know, do we have a great leap forward before we get there? Sure. Is this the first step? In my mind, you know, absolutely. And you look at the protests in Iran this summer, and you look at the kids from Tehran University, and what do you think the government did right after those protests? First of all, they sent their armed guards into Tehran University to beat the students. But I can assure you that curriculum was changed, that professors were fired, and that reports had to be issued on what they're teaching, and obviously it was too liberal because the students, you know, were taking Mousavi's side and the protesters' side.
Right.
And I don't want to go down anything that's near that path. And I found that the debate really disconcerting. I found some of the opinions of legislators, fellow legislators, kind of astonishing. And I look at the people who were the 12, and, you know, Lisa and I were two of the 12. And Lisa and I don't agree on a whole lot in judicial proceedings, but we certainly agree at this. I was actually surprised that there wasn't anybody from the other side of the aisle on the side of the 12. And,
well,
and if I could just say, I think one of the reasons was because a lot of them were from the shore. And the question is, you know, do you value academic freedom more, or do you value, you know, Purdue or whoever else?
In all fairness, we do have now somebody, a representative from the Eastern Shore,
good,
who has joined us, Delegate Richard Soce, who represents the 36th District, Eastern Shore, Deputy Minority Whip, and a member of the Environmental Matters Committee. Delegate Soce, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you. I've been listening to the comments of my colleague from the Senate there. You know, that's all well and good what he's been saying, but the reality is we have a situation where a out-of-state group, Waterkeepers, Bobby Kennedy, fly over the Eastern Shore and misread a circumstance, a situation, and then our own university's law clinic decides to hop on the bandwagon. You know, I personally, as a taxpayer representing the folks on the shore, once in a while I'd like to see our people get involved on our side of the issue and not always be taking the other side. It's just grating. I tell you, I'm not on appropriations, so I don't know exactly what may or may not be done there. But you know, it's at some point you just throw up your hand and say, wait a minute, when are you going to come? I asked the Attorney General. You know, he keeps claiming he's a friend of farmers. And I asked him in committee if he was going to join in on behalf of the family farm. That's been, you know, it's going to cost him $100,000. And if they do that, you know, a few more times, we won't have any family farmers left on the shore. And then we'll lose the industry, and then what? I mean, you know, there are a lot of us in rural areas that begin to wonder if our colleagues on the Western Shore just want to see the big park on the Eastern Shore, just a big green area until they get down to Ocean City. That's the way we feel, you know, sometimes when some of the regulations and laws that get passed. I mean, it may be well-intentioned, but here was a case where they said it was chicken litter, it was outside, and whatever. Then turned out it was sewage sludge from Ocean City, and because of the you know, the winter conditions, they weren't able to apply it to the fields. And there's a big difference. I realize that some of our colleagues don't know the difference, but there is a big difference between treated sewage sludge and chicken litter. So, anyway, that's my feeling. It's not a matter of trying to dictate to anybody what they can or can't do, but at some point you'll say, well, wait a second now, you know, let's stop feeding the hand and stop biting the hand rather than feed you, and let's just, you know, look before we leap.
Well, let me say to Delegate Associate, I don't want you to feel outnumbered here, but that we did ask Senator Coburn and other people in the delegation to come on. So far, you'd be the only one who braved the airways with us.
That's fine. I'm a Republican in the legislature. I'm always outnumbered.
So, Senator Gladden's here, Senator Brooks is here.
After a while, we almost enjoy getting kicked, you know.
And if Senator Coburn comes on, we're getting right in the middle of this conversation as well. So, we'll go back and forth and give you a equal shot at everything that gets said here so we can get down to this. But let me turn, I think, to Robert Percival, Director of Environmental Law Program, who's in the studio. And the two senators, Gladden and Brochin, are on by phone, as you are, Delegate Soce.
All right.
But you want you to respond,
yeah,
Robert. And then
Delegate Soce, with all due respect, I think that's really a complete mischaracterization of this case. This case is being brought on behalf of the Assateague Coastal Trust, which consists of hundreds of Maryland residents, ordinary citizens from all walks of life. And the purpose of the case is really to defend the Chesapeake Bay. State funds aren't being used to support any out-of-state special interest groups. They're being used to support the health and vitality of the Chesapeake Bay. If it wasn't for the fact that the Bay itself can't sue, the case would be captioned Chesapeake Bay versus Purdue. We have no beef with the ordinary farmer. In fact, the status of things... Yes, we are. No, Purdue Farms is a defendant in this case, and that's the real problem. The way they operate, Purdue gets all the profits and leaves all the problems to the poor farmers. The agriculture, big agribusiness on the Eastern Shores, the big agribusiness is really the only industry in this country that is able to completely escape responsibility for dealing with the waste problems they create that are a major source of the reason for the pollution of the Chesapeake Bay.
But, you know, look, first of all, if I misstated any of the facts, it's because it's what I read in the paper, and I know the papers never get it wrong. So, the reality is Purdue has built a plant in Delaware, because we're going to get the permitting in Maryland, to pelletize chicken litter. They've gone through all sorts of things to shipping it out to the Midwest where they need the additional fertilizer. They've got all sorts of programs to assist the farmers in removing and or treating chicken litter. So to say that they just sort of let this happen and have no whatever, they're not in my district. I mean, I'm up in the northeast part of the state. You know, like Queen Anne's County is a large grain producer. So obviously, you know, when and if chicken production disappears from the Eastern Shore, our grain people are going to be hurting as well. So I have an interest in that regard, but I also have an interest just in common sense and fairness.
Mark, can I add something?
Who's that?
Yeah. Senator Brochin,
go ahead, and then we'll go back to Delegate Sosi. So I really do want to give him equal time here since...
Yeah, I just want to respond to something that Delegate Sosi is saying, and I mean, don't take this the wrong way, but I just don't think that you're hitting the point, or that it's anybody's damn business what these students are studying. It totally flies in the face of academic freedom. I mean, and if you heard me before, you know, I've been an adamant supporter of the death penalty since the day I walked into the body, and I see these students taking death penalty cases all the time, okay? Have enough confidence in the system and the students that maybe they'll walk in with understanding both sides, and that maybe they'll end up being a lawyer, an attorney for the, someone will be end up being an attorney for the defendant for Purdue or whoever else when they get out of law school, and maybe they'll take the case pro bono. But it's none of our damn business to interfere with academic freedom. And if you want the state controlling academic freedom, you're going to have a real problem on your hands soon.
Well, it's really a larger issue than academic freedom, too. The question is really, how do you resolve these disputes? We in the United States resolve them through an independent judiciary. We resolve them in the courts. And you don't go after the lawyers just because you don't like what they're doing. You have the case resolved in the courts. What they do in communist China, as Senator Brochin said on the Senate floor, is to not let these cases be brought, to go after the lawyers. And I actually this weekend was visited by a Chinese environmental law professor. I explained to her what was going on in the General Assembly, and she expressed horror. She says, that's what happens in our country, not in the United States.
Delegate, go ahead.
Well, I guess I'm just flabbergasted. Look, the amount of money that we spend in the university and the amount of money that we were down to a situation where this farmer is a family farm. It's $100,000, so it's going to cost them at a minimum to defend this. And these folks have, if unlimited resources because the state of Maryland is paying for this, you know, the law center to go after them. They have all the freedom they want to do what they want. Nobody is embargoing what they say. If they want to go do that and take the summer or take time off and go and pursue this case because they feel so strongly about it, that's fine. I'm just asking that they're not doing it with our dollar. This is not communist China. In communist China, if they went and did it, then they'd probably wind up in some camp someplace. We're just saying, you know, don't make us pay to beat ourselves up.
This is Anthony McCarthy. I want to ask Senator Glatton and Senator Brochin and Delegate Sosi, the language itself really just is a reporting requirement, correct?
That's right.
Is it much more than that?
No. I mean, because what they were charged with and what the misread of the so-called violation was that they're allowing the chicken litter to get into the stream, and the reality was it was sewage sludge from Ocean City.
I think Delegate Glatton will probably answer the question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Senator?
Part of it is that the decision that needs to be made as to whether or not this is chicken or whether or not it's human sludge has not been decided yet. It's still in litigation. Am I right?
Oh, no. Senator, I'm sorry. No, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. It definitely was sludge. The only question is the department has not completed.
That's what I'm saying. I know. I know exactly what's happened. The decision has not been made, and I understand that the people on the Eastern Shore who are who are very, very, I mean, they're adamant about what the what it was. It has not been determined yet.
No, Senator, it has been determined that it is, in fact, fudge. What hasn't been determined is the amount of nutrient or what nutrient, if any, and the department, NDE, is, you know, taking its time to determine what pollution, if any, actually went into the water. But there's no question about what the pile of it was. It was not chicken litter. It was fudge.
Again, this is an issue that will be decided in court, and it's not a reason to attack the lawyers for having brought a legitimate lawsuit that is anything frivolous.
Sir, we just passed legislation on the floor preventing so-called big corporations from using slap suits. And the listeners may not be familiar with that, but this is an attempt by, you know, somebody, if they're being sued by environmentalists or for somebody, they can then take them to court for something. And in essence, this is what's happening. These farmers, this farmer is getting slapped with a suit.
Well, the minister has this question, though.
They're going to spend $100,000, excuse me, around here, millions seem to fall off the lips too easily, $100,000. To defend themselves against something that is rather obvious that it wasn't what they were claimed that what was claimed that it was.
Well, the question I have, though, let me ask you all this question about what's going on, because I mean, because we're getting hung up in some of these words here, and I saw the articles that said this aerial photo in this particular farm, was it sludge or was it chicken manure, and many people say it's sludge and not chicken manure, so.
Right.
Let me just, Bob Percival, before we go take a break here, is that the basis of this lawsuit, and are there other lawsuits that are around this we're not talking about?
The basis of the lawsuit is a violation of the Clean Water Act by violating the no discharge requirement for the bacteria and nutrients that otherwise would get into the bay from mismanagement of these piles, regardless of what they are.
So
we agree. See.
So the question is, though, and let me ask you a very all frank question here, and get your assessment. I mean, look, money. This is tough to say because I have respect to everybody in this panel, but let me just say that money plays power in politics on many levels. Purdue has a lot of weight to throw around. The newspaper said that part of what happened here was that the spokesman for Purdue actually said, he was quoted as saying, I think his name was Luma, it was quoted as saying, I can get the exact quote here for you in a second, but he said that we brought this to the attention of the Eastern Shore delegation, that we were not happy about these lawsuits, and they affect Purdue, and they affect our ability to stay in Maryland, and then legally, the legislative actions were set into motion after the meeting with Purdue. So there's a direct connection here between, it seems to me, the power of Purdue. It's like, you know, sometimes you might get a phone call from some of the powerful corporation in Baltimore, be it Johns Hopkins or anybody else, and go, we don't like this bill. You got to do something about it. And people listen because they have the power. So the question is that part of what's going on here? Are we talking about this overall larger question about who actually runs the farms in the Eastern Shore? Which is the second question, is it the small farmer? Because I love family farmers. I live all around them. They live all around me. That's where I buy all my vegetables and meat from, come from farmers. I don't go to the supermarket. So I love family farmers. But the question is this a question of family farmers, or is this a question of Purdue kind of raising chickens on people's families' farms, and they're polluting the bay, and this is a lawsuit that's causing all this commotion? And are those the issues involved here? And is there something larger going on here that we don't want to kind of wrestle with? And maybe, should we start that now? Should we take a quick break? Let's take a quick break right now and come back to wrestle with that with our four guests. Senator Lisa Gladden, Senator Jim Brochin, Delegate Richard Richard, and Robert Percival from the Environmental Law Program, here with Anthony McCarthy and Mark Steiner. Trying to get to the bottom of it all. 410-319-8888 is the number. I remind you, on our way to this break, that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. And?
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
You join us here.
People are really interested in this. I'm responding to some text messages.
We're getting
people
text messages.
They have some questions about business, big business, all that stuff.
And I want to apologize to our listeners who have called in and didn't get on right away. If you call back now at 410-319-8888, we'll bring you into this conversation with Senator Lisa Gladden, Senator Jim Brochin, and Robert Percival. Robert Percival is director of the Environmental Law Program at the University of Maryland School of Law. We lost Delegate Soce. We're trying to call him back at his office, but the answer machine is picking up. I hope that he comes right back on. He wanted to really wrestle with this larger question here that we're talking about. 410-319-8888. We're talking about the suits being brought by the Environmental Law Program, the University of Maryland School of Law, which are directed at Purdue, a powerhouse industry on the eastern shore of Maryland, and who also very politically powerful. I mean, Governor Martin O'Malley gave him a very huge award right after this was all announced. That happened as well. So, I mean, he's not an unknown figure. $4.6 billion in business last year. The third largest poultry farm in poultry corporation in the country, agricultural firm in the country, I should say. And number is 410-319-8888. I hope we can get Delegate Soce back here. But just all of you pick up what I said last. I mean, is that what we're talking about here? I mean, you intimated as much when we started, Senator Gladden.
Yes. I mean, you know, spin any way you want. This is about whether or not business in the state of Maryland can flex to the extent that they would chill academic pursuits at one of the nationally recognized institutions of higher learning. I think this is, and we can call it anything we want, but that's what this is about.
But Lisa, let me ask you this question. Just, I mean, you're a very forthright person. I mean, you're a good politician, but also very forthright. Doesn't always go together.
Yeah.
And so what was going on in the Senate that the vote was 35 to 12?
So lopsided, yeah.
First off, it came at a strange time, and I think Jim can probably, you know, sort of get a sense as to what was going on the floor, because I'll tell you, the chairman of our committee sits in front of me, and he said, you know, they're getting ready to talk about the University of Maryland, your school, and I was doing 1,000 other things, and so I don't want to make excuses for what perhaps, you know, the other senators weren't doing, but this is an issue where it wasn't clear, and I'm going to say this too, because I've now talked to everybody as I possibly could talk to about this issue, and I think it's pretty much a done deal, because the senator who brought this language to the budget committee, his delegate is the chairman of the Appropriations Committee in the House, and so from what I understand, it's the least offensive language that could have been used, but clearly it still does, as I think Jim has said, it's chilling to law schools and to other academic places.
I guess the delegate you're talking about is Norm Conway. That's his committee?
He's from the Eastern Shore.
Right.
So he and Stolfus, Senator Stolfus brought the language to the committee. He's on budget and tax anyway, but he brought the language to the committee, and the committee worked through his language, which was different than the language that was presented. And I'm not on the committee, so this is all kind of third hand.
Right, right.
But he brought the language. They fixed it to the best they could. They brought it to the floor. The senators just didn't get a sense as to what it was. Senator Raskin started the debate. And then, you know, some of us stood up, some of us tried to support him, but clearly, it's almost a snowball going downhill.
Mark?
Jim, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think Lisa hits the nail on the head, and to me also, it was, and believe me, I've never been accused of being an intellectual snob, but I won't try and be one here, but I don't think that unless you went through law school or unless you went through graduate school, I don't think a lot of people understand how important the concept of academic freedom is on the graduate level. And I think that that's what was missing in the debate, because unless you lived it, I remember when I was in graduate school, You know, I mean, I used to spend hours in the Soviet archives, which sounds kind of boring, but to me it was just fascinating, and to study and do what I wanted to do there. And I imagine, you know, that the law students probably go through, you know, something similar, that these are the choices they have, and that they decide something, is so important to, you know, what type of critical thinker or lawyer or academician, you know, you become. And I don't think a lot of people in that body have that experience. And it's a wide array of a lot of different types of people. And I think even the ones that did or understood it, maybe that their district and their constituents' concerns trumped academic freedom.
Well, I question, but let me. I think academic freedom could be a piece of this. Let me go to the phones here, though, and I guess some listeners are calling in.
Okay.
And then I'm going to turn to Bob Percival. Is it Robert or Bob? How do you like
Bob
to go?
Swain.
Bob. 410-319-8888. I want to just switch it up. Mike in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Mike.
I have 2 points. I'm a regular citizen. I go to work every day. Middle class. No, I don't have a law degree or anything like this. But what you have here is 800-pound gorilla, Purdue, Tyson, flexing their muscle. What he, what they told Mr. Stoltz was this. We don't like this bill. If you want your people to work in our factories, if you want these people paying tax, and if you want this job, kill the bill. Kill the bill immediately or else. And where I'm from, all we call that is a bribe. Where they're from, that's called lobbying. What's the point of gaining something and lose everything? Like the gentleman said, when you start stifling students' freedom to express themselves, then what you're saying to these people is that your rights as a citizen don't matter. Your viewpoint does not matter. Our founding fathers made the decision that the United States will be founded on the right to express yourself. And you have these big corporations that are flexing their muscles and paying off these senators and congressmen and lining their pockets. And Ms. Gladden, your excuse for why it passed, I find that kind of harsh. Try going to work every day and working a menial labor job, 9 to 5, and not paying the bills, where you're just basically sitting in the Senate. And I understand it takes a lot of intellectual fortitude to do what you do. But to regular citizens who put their lives on the line, to regular citizens who punch the clock, we find that horrible.
Senator?
Hello?
Hello. Okay, I'm sorry, I was going to let Senator Gladden respond.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how to respond. Unlike most of the legislators in Annapolis, I have 2 jobs. The day after session ends, I'm back doing what I do 9 months of the year. And so while I've explained to you what it is as a reality, that perhaps there were 1,000 things going on the floor, but quite frankly, everybody who knew about this before needs to be calling their legislators, and everybody in the state of Maryland has at least 1, if not 4, legislators. You need to call them and tell them you don't like it. And so I voted against it because I thought it was wrong. I spoke out against it because I thought it was wrong. But the truth of the matter is there is a gorilla in the room, and it's bigger than just the 12 of us who voted against this measure.
So, you know, when you talk about this gorilla in the room, and Bob Percival, when you hear this, I mean, I was just looking at the Food and Water Watch website, and their website says, take action, don't let factory farms control who gets state funding. And someone else is saying that if you cut this $250,000 from the University of Maryland's budget, that it's tantamount in terms of, I think not quite what they meant was, they're saying it's tantamount to $1 million. What does that mean? Can you explain what that means?
Well, there were various versions of the bill. One was to take $750,000 away from University of Maryland Baltimore and another $250,000 away from the whole university system. So it could have been as much as $1 million.
I see.
I think
told.
Now it's about $500,000 in the current form.
So, but what Lisa Gladden, you just said, it reminded me of Dick Durbin, senator from Illinois, and when he said, and we're going to hear this quote over and over again now, that they're debating the Financial Reform Act in Congress, when he said the banks own this place. So, I mean, that's why I was hoping that Delegate Soci would stay and that some others would come on, and Senator Coburn was going to join us, because, I mean, I really think that it's important to kind of talk about this in terms of, A, what it says about farming and the future of farming the Eastern Shore and the future of our Chesapeake Bay and how those things live side by side, and B, about the power of huge money and corporate power in the state kind of dictating things like this, because it might seem small, but Bob Percival, this is not small.
No, it's a huge problem. We'll never have a clean bay unless we're able to solve the problem of agricultural pollution. And one thing that Delegate Soci said that I would agree with, he mentioned some of the things that Purdue has done on a demonstration basis to come up with better ways of disposing of this waste. That's precisely what we hope the response to this lawsuit will be, that they'll start taking more responsibility instead of just dumping and leaving all the waste that their chickens generated on the farmer. And we really need to get them involved and more active in taking responsibility to ensure that this no longer is a gigantic source of pollution of the bay. And the other point is that virtually all of our federal environmental laws have citizen suit provisions, and they really are the envy of the world, because Congress realized that there'll be a lot of political pressure on states who may not be able to have the resources to fully enforce the environmental laws. But by opening up the possibility that ordinary citizens who live near the resources that those laws are intended to protect could go into court and bring lawsuits, precisely what the students in the Environmental Law Clinic are doing on behalf of the plaintiffs in these cases, that was totally legitimate and something that was absolutely vital to seeing that the law's promise of environmental protection was carried out. And to respond to that by then saying that somehow this is illegitimate and we should go after the lawyers and stop them from bringing the cases, instead of just saying, well, let's let the legal process take its course and work it out through our independent judiciary, is really exactly the wrong message that our political leaders should be sending the next generation of lawyers.
Excellent. That's exactly right.
Yeah. I think you hit it right on the head. And, you know, I go back, you know, to what I said in the beginning. I mean, you know, I see lawyers in training, you know, defending, you know, what I consider, you know, convicted murderers who shouldn't see the light of day and should be executed.
But here's the thing. We really don't do – I'm just going to just say that the clinic does not deal with death penalty cases. It's too big a kind of case, and students, while they do a lot of stuff, they don't do death penalty cases. I mean, I've done a lot of stuff. I was a member of the clinic, so
– I think they've never done it before.
They do some ancillary stuff, as like Colvinell. We did the Colvinell case, but we don't take these cases to trial.
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess I've seen some of the ancillary stuff, and the point again I'm trying to make is, you know, the delegate was on before, and you know, and he can't defend himself now because he's not on. But you know, he said, when are you going to be on my side? And you know, I would answer that and say it's none of your business. It's just an academic freedom issue. And when they're on your side, they're on your side. And when they're not, they're not. And just live with it.
Well, and he was under the misimpression that the lawsuit was only against Hudson Farms and not
right,
Purdue,
right.
Which he admitted he had not heard. So it's obvious that not all the facts are getting out to some of the people that are supporting this.
Yeah. Hey, Mark, I definitely wouldn't say, though, that the Purdue's are the 800-pound gorillas. I mean, you know, there are times in the chamber, and, you know, Lisa can attest to this, when we'll have environmental legislation in, and the environmentalist view will prevail and the Purdue's will lose. And you know, it's more of a public policy thing, and I go back to before. I just don't think that for the other 35 that, you know, the juice was worth the squeeze here, and I just don't think that a lot of them had the personal experience. And you know, there are some attorneys in the Senate that are older also, and probably weren't part of this clinic, and probably didn't understand the resources that were available then. Didn't get a chance to have the resources that were available then, and enjoy the academic freedom that you can get from it. And I just think there was a real lack of understanding more than anything, which helped bring this down.
And that raises another issue also, which is that the state of Maryland has a reputation nationwide as being a very progressive state that is interested in protecting the Chesapeake Bay and a leader in environmental protection. And that's why this is doing so much damage to that reputation, because it's now attracting national attention. We're hearing from professors and law school deans all over the country and even all over the world about this. And they're saying, well, this is the kind of thing we might have expected in a state like Louisiana. But in Maryland, they're absolutely shocked. And that will do tremendous damage to the reputation of one of the crown jewels of the University of Maryland system, our law school and our environmental law program and our environmental law clinic.
Well, I mean, but to say that in the years I've been involved in watching politics and being part of all this, and even in the years before that when I was actually in the middle of politics running people's campaigns, none of which ever won, but I ran them anyway.
Mark, I didn't win any until my own either.
I'm not running. I say that to say that we have not been able to pass laws in this state that protect the Chesapeake Bay from the runoffs, and most of it comes from farms, and a lot of it comes from. Well, look at the battle we're having with stormwater runoff right now,
and trying to get that
dealt with, and we know what that does to the bay and to our tributaries.
That's a good point.
And we can't pass these things because I think that I'm not trying to build bogeymen here, because I think this is a democracy and we have a lot we can battle for, which is why you have the Bob Percivals of the world running law clinics and fighting things legally, and why you have people like you all in the Senate, and Lisa, you've been, you know, battling the people's fights in the Senate, and Jim, you're there. So the question I'm saying, though, what I'm trying to say is that you look at this, and we have not been able to pass because of highway interests, developers' interests, large corporate farms. I mean, you're not saying this, the small family farmers who are trying to do things sustainably, arguing that we don't know how to take care of our chicken manure.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a valid point, and you know, there's certainly 14 Republicans, and there's certainly at least 10 conservative to moderate Democrats that join them on environmental stuff. And you know, I know Lisa has a stellar environmental record, and I think mine's about 93% in the 8 years I've been there. And you know, a lot of times it is close to an uphill battle, and one of the things in the Senate is you only need 19 for a filibuster, so on a major issue, they can easily pick up another 5, and those 14 vote as a block on this issue. So you pick up another 5 on a major issue, and you can get that filibuster, and you know, at least the threat is there.
That's true.
Lisa, I mean, how would you evaluate that in terms of the...
I think democracy is about numbers. And I think that Jim is right in the sense that you have 14 Republicans, you have a number of conservative Democrats who might as well be Republicans too. And it just seems to me that a lot of it is about educating. In the 12 years that I've been around, I've learned more than I could ever think that I could learn in either law school or an undergraduate experience. There's just so much that you learn. And we have to continue to educate our legislators about issues that are not just important and perhaps obscure, but issues that may not affect their constituency, but will have a grave effect on the whole state of Maryland. Because, you know, the clinic helped to produce some of the incredible rankings nationally of the University of Maryland. And so because of that, and while our legislators will say we've got a great clinic system in the University of Maryland School of Law, they don't seem to understand a lot of the reason that we have the stellar rating is because we have a lot of academic freedom. And when you chill it, understandably, our numbers are going to go down.
And if you look at the things that have been said in this case, and Bob, first of all, I want you to comment on this, Chairman of the Purdue company, Jim Purdue, has said that he fears more Clean Water Act enforcement lawsuits taking place, and that he could move things out of state. And the state doesn't seem to be responding. I mean, the Department of Environment is not kind of investigating the incident, the problem lawsuit, and said that didn't really go after it. And so you got a situation where, I mean, that Purdue is saying, Jim Purdue is... You know, we could be saying to him, "Done great things for the state, but you're polluting the bay, and this has to stop." I mean, But it is what you're up against.
Well, but the Clean Water Act is a federal statute. Wherever he goes, their operations are going to have to abide by federal law, and you can't discharge without a permit under the Clean Water Act. So he can threaten all he wants to take his operations elsewhere, but he's still going to be facing the prospect of citizen suits to enforce that federal law. And that was the genius that Congress had when it wrote the Clean Water Act and why it's been such an important force for environmental improvement around the country.
May you see Senator Cardin trying to introduce a bill in the United States Senate to give greater power to supersede the power of Maryland to make this work. Do you think what's necessary? Senators Gladden or Brochin?
I mean, I think you need, every weapon you have, and if that's what Ben needs to do, then that's what needs to be done. And, in my 8 years down here, we haven't dropped that much further down, but we haven't made any progress either. And, you see everything we passed, and, Ehrlich's flush tax and the promises of the wastewater sewage treatment plant, once that stuff became, effective, was supposed to be the biggest thing that we've done in 50 years. And as important as it was, and it was an incredible accomplishment and something I supported, you would hope now that 6 years later that you'd start seeing real improvement, and we haven't. So I just think you take every tool in the arsenal you have.
But you got to use them. Just because they're sitting in the arsenal, you got to use them, and you don't want them to collect dust. And you don't want them to become perhaps outdated. And sometimes we pass these laws and we just let them sit on the books. And someone has to have a political will that says we are going to save the bay. And it cannot be a slogan that you stamp on the bottom of a license plate. And it's not to be something cute. You've got to realize that if we do not save the bay, we cannot save the state.
And I'll tell you something, Mark. Not only is Lisa right, but I represent a district that, it's 50% Democrat, 33% Republican, and 17% Independent. And, a lot of the Democrats in Towson and Timonium, vote Republican and just registered Democrat. And I can tell you that the overwhelming majority in my district, and I've hit almost every neighborhood, want to save the bay. They know it'll take some pain, and they're willing to have their legislators, vote that way. And if the will is there in the 42nd District, and I know it is, okay, and I campaign on it, I campaign as a liberal on the environment, and that's the voting record I have, then there's no reason we shouldn't be able to do this.
It's going to cost money. It's more than just, it's more than just grand ideas. It's going to cost money, whether it's a flush tax, as Ehrlich so willingly passed years ago. We've got to recognize that the way that we clean up the bay is both federal and it's going to be local, and that the federal government's got to say, I'm going to do something with Virginia and with Maryland and Pennsylvania, which we sometimes don't do. We don't want to work as a collaborative, and we don't want to say we're willing to spend the money. And until we are willing to spend the money to clean the bay, it's never going to get done right.
Yeah, she's right.
Senator Gladden and Senator Brochin, it's been great to have you on here as well. Bob Percival, thank you so much. And Anthony, always to have you as my partner here on Mondays. I want to say that you should let your delegates and senators know how you feel about this. It's very important. It could, if the delegate bill passes, it will be $750,000 against the work being done by Law Clinic. And the Law Clinic is really essentially the biggest pro bono law firm in the state. So let people know what you feel about this bill and what you think they should be voting on, whatever you think that is. I'm not telling you how to think or how to vote. I'm just telling you how to talk to your delegates and senators, let them know. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Mark.
And go to steinershow.org so you can see what's going on. And I want to wish everyone out there a happy Passover. Those of you who hope you enjoyed your Palm Sunday. This is a holiday of Passover and Easter for us to come together and be thankful for many things. I want to remind you, where is this other piece of paper? I got to read real fast. Here it is. We don't want you to go away when I finish this announcement, because coming up right after the Mark Steiner Show, WEAA presents the Detroit Jazz Festival featuring Patty Austin, Stanley Jordan, and Carl Allen. Stay tuned for that and, just jam the night away right here on WEAA. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Is that? Yep, Brian's back there today. And our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Richard Good, Gabe Pinder, and Felicia Faison. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and log on for information about these shows, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.